On today's College Football Inquirer, how big should the cap be? And hey, what's in the cap? We're going to talk about NIL. We're going to talk about rev share. We're going to talk about the schedule in Washington, D.C. We're going to talk about the schedule for television networks. We're going to talk about how all that might or might not impact the 2026 season and beyond, when the playoff might expand. And oh yeah, NBC is no longer part of Comcast. So how does that affect the Big Ten and Notre Dame and the future? We'll talk about it all. This is the College Football Inquirer. I am not Andy Staples, as I feel legally recommended to say. I'm in that host seat, Ross. It's terrifying. You and I were texting before, and I was like, do you want me to do it? And you were like, yes, please, because I feel like you have the same apprehension as I do. That when fearless leader is gone, what do we do? That is Ross Dellinger. Andy Staples is out just for this episode. He'll be back, I promise. Don't fret. Ross, today we're going to talk about, a little bit of the usual, a little bit of the future, and then a little bit of the near term, because I'm going to take all the stuff you've been working on. We're going to try and map out what exactly is going to happen when. And if you are just a college football novice, as we approach the 4th of July, you're trying to figure out all this stuff that's happened in the offseason. Is this going to affect me or my team or my conference this season? All right?
Yeah.
Sound good, buddy?
Ready? Hi, Godfrey. Hi, host Godfrey.
Yeah, it's terrifying. I've done this once before, but both of you are gone. So this is a lot of substitute teacher energy. I may just tell cool story. Do you remember the episode of Saved by the Bell where the cool building is the sub?
Yes. Yeah.
Yes. Rod building. We're going to do a lot of rod building energy today for sure. Okay.
No problem.
Ross, I am immediately going to pitch it back to you because in your latest On Three column, there is a, let's call it a healthy discussion, wink, wink, of limits on rev. And I'll go ahead and set the table. Shockingly, the people with the most money are saying, hey, why don't we bump this cap? Although I don't know if they're supposed to say cap. Why don't we bump this cap higher? And other individuals are saying, hey, why don't we bump this cap a little bit lower? Walk me through why the debate is happening specifically, and then what the logical outcome is going to be in the short term. Today's going to be all about the short term.
So the cap now, obviously, as we know, the cap starting next year, as we know, is $21.3 million. And we know that the market right now in the power conferences, like if you averaged what every power conference school is spending on their athletes, I think it would be well above 21, probably. It probably would be more closer to 41 than 21, I'm going to guess, if you do it all their athletes. So that's an issue. And the thought is, well, let's just raise the cap and put in some other stuff like a luxury tax, try to make it a harder cap. All this money that schools are using to funnel through multimedia rights partners and corporate sponsors that are going to rosters, let's lump all that into the cap. Let's raise the cap. That's the goal, right? That's the goal, to get to a harder cap. And so the talk is, what should that harder cap be? And I think they're going back and forth on that right now, and they being the conference commissioners, because, oh, by the way, this really needs to be a unanimous decision among all the conferences and all the defendants of the House settlement, which there were six.
Oh, boy.
The NCAA, the Big Ten, Big 12, ACC, SEC, and then the Pac-12, actually, was all defendants in the House settlement. Oftentimes, Godfrey, people ask, what the heck is the Pac-12 doing as one of the power conferences in the House settlement? When the House settlement was filed, which I think was 2020 or 2021, the Pac-12 was a power conference. So before the collapse of it all. So that's the reason. So they all have to agree, right, to raise the cap, and they can present the new cap and all these new rules to the House plaintiff attorneys, who we've talked about in the show quite a bit, Jeffrey Kessler and Steve Berman. If they approve it, then they move it on to the magistrate judge who oversees the settlement. And if they approve it, then we have new rules and we have a new cap. The problem is, right now, everybody can't agree on the cap because, oh, Godfrey, as you know, the Big Ten and SEC are spending upwards of 50, 60, 70 million on their athletes.
Yeah.
And the ACC and Big 12 are not close to that.
Let me back up for a second, because I think the consensus number that fans and media that isn't as close to this as you are talked about was 2 years ago, Ohio State won a national championship. And 2 years ago, the talk around college football was that that price tag for an Ohio State championship, just the roster, not paying Ryan Day or anything else that they invest in Ohio State football, was about $20 million. That was what was kicked around, right? Will Howard, that team, goes on, wins the first 12-team bracket. Certainly, we're all suffering from inflation here in America, but damn, Ross, if that number is correct, more or less than $20 million, that was exiting that season before Indiana won last year. There was a lot of talk about, oh, hey, you know, the buy-in for a national championship contender is about $20 million. Now we're talking about three times that for a lot of national title contenders. So I want to start there. So the rate of inflation on paying for the roster has shot up out of nowhere. So let's start. Yeah. Is that accurate for more or less?
Yeah, and let's keep in mind too, when I say 50, 60, 70 million, I am lumping in men's basketball too, right? I'm doing all the athletes, because the cap is not just football, right? It's everything. Right. But I think you're right. I think still it's double. It's probably more than doubled in at the top, right? If Ohio State was at the top and was at 24? 2024 season, right?
Yeah, we'll call it the end. Yeah, I never know what to call it because title game
and that was sort of the, I don't want to say famous, but that was like the notable interview that I had with Ross Bjork at the Big Ten Football Media Day, which I think maybe Ross got a few calls after that when he acknowledged to me on the record, we're spending $20 million on our team this year. And it kind of blew up. And now you look, and they were the top then, and you look 2 years later, and I'm guessing the top team is high 40s, if not 50 million. So it's more than double the amount. I think that's accurate. What's crazier is men's basketball, right? I think 2 years ago, men's basketball roster, maybe at the high end was 6 to 8 million. Now at the high end is probably in the low 20s. So it's probably tripled. It's been a significant increase there, but both of them, right, have increased to the point where when administrators say it's just not sustainable, it's hard to square that when you have the salaries continue to rise. They keep paying more. They keep redirecting more revenue. They keep asking boosters for more. And I know why, right? Everybody wants to be competitive and win, but you can't on one side say, we can't do this anymore. And on the other side, keep doing it.
Yes. So it's not an outlier is what you're saying. It's not one or two of the sort of the richest, most oil booster laden programs. What we're seeing is actually just kind of a market trend of an upper class that is saying one thing and doing another. Not that atypical, honestly, for college sports or American business. Right. But I want to go back because I get a lot of feedback on our show of people asking, all right, you're talking about NIL, and you're talking about Rev.
Yeah,
those numbers are sometimes combined when we talk about things because we're talking about payment to players or sort of like the cost of the roster, for instance. But they're negotiated and litigated in separate spaces. So we're just talking about Rev here. That doesn't even include individual NIL deals, which we're dealing with the clearinghouse on that. and that number as well is, we think, for as much as we can discern from what's available, also skyrocketing. So the number might be bigger.
Yeah, I think so. But the goal of any cap raise is to take all of that or most of that NIL. Basically, any above the cap spending that schools are doing by way of multimedia rights or corporate sponsors, right? Apparel brands, any business that has an affiliation or a contract with the school. All their compensation to the roster would be counted into this cap. And by the way, that's what the congressional bill says. The Senate bill does do this already. But if you're going to do this, then you have to raise the cap. So the idea is all this third-party money, at least with affiliated entities that are contracted with the school, count against the cap. We raise the cap, maybe put in a luxury tax of 20-30%. And then you have more of a harder cap, but always, Godfrey, as a smirk emerges from your face, always there's a workaround and somebody finds a workaround. And the workaround of this is pretty obvious. You then go out and you start mining businesses and brands that don't have any connection with the school. That's sort of the obvious workaround, is you do it that way.
So I think the way to explain this in layman's terms in the summer of our Lord 2026, before anything else changes fundamentally, is there will be a cap, and that cap will constitute the rev share from the schools and the NIL from affiliated parties. Okay? Is that fair to say?
I think that's very accurate. Yep.
The Bagman methodology, if you will, moving forward, is not the $100 handshake or the duffel bag of cash. It is to take the unaffiliated business. So it's kind of funny because you and I both, from where we come in the country and sort of the heart of you know, college football fanaticism, if you're a local business or a regional business, the first thing you want to do is position yourself as an ally of, or the official blank of, said big university, right? Like,
yeah.
I know every time I go to Baton Rouge, it's always the such and such of, you know, the official blank of LSU football,
yeah.
Right? They've got everything, the official toilet brush, the official cigarette, all that kind of stuff. Like, and the reason why is that's good marketing. It's good for your business. Yeah. But now, to help under the table, you need to have no paper trail back to the university that you're actually benefiting, because, let me see if I get this right. I feel like I'm taking an oral exam here. The reason why is that where litigation stands is that the NCAA and the clearinghouse can't stop someone from taking an endorsement deal in the purest sort of sense of name, image, and likeness from an unaffiliated party of the university, because then that is the conceit, that's the core of name, to profit off of one's name, image, and likeness. So the example I was using, I was trying to explain all this. So it's about to be 4th of July weekend. We're all about to interact with relatives and maybe people from a different generation, boomers, who don't quite understand what's going on. And so I'm trying my best, like a hand puppets and a chalkboard. You can have the local business give you NIL. You can get the rev share as an athlete. That's going to count against the cap. But if a major, if some random trucking company comes along and says, we want to do an endorsement with you, commercials with you, but we just want to do it because of your status as an athlete, that doesn't count against the cap and it can't be stopped. Is that correct?
That's right. Right. That's that would be the sort of the way that you could exceed the cap. Maybe the only way you could exceed the cap. We all know another way, which is the old school bag man. We also have that could reemerge, as it's already has to a degree, but it could really reemerge if you have a harder cap.
You know, what's funny about the old school way, and I'll give all the, I affectionately call them all the dirt doers, kind of the secret economy of the sport for decades and decades.
Yeah.
Andy was right the last time we talked about this. They're not dead. A lot of them have died off, and a lot of them have gone legit. It's like a regime change in a country, going from like capitalism, communism, or vice versa, whatever.
Well, they have businesses, right? They're doing like quote legitimate deals. But if all those deals are counted against the cap,
Right. What I'm getting at is actually the oldest methodology of, hey, here is cash that we have pooled together at some guy, we all met at some guy's house, or there's a booster event in our region, and like all the stuff I wrote about years and years and years ago. Most of those guys that I kept in touch with, Ross, I'm gonna be honest. One, they're priced out, because if you hand a kid $5,000 in cash that's making legitimate rev share and NIL and has got multiple deals, what is $5,000 in cash? It's lost all its control. $5,000 in cash now to your average 3 or 4 star player in the SEC is not going to really influence them to do much of anything at all. The second part is these guys can't meet the market with black market payments, because it just, they have to account for the cash. It's funny.
Yeah.
When NIL showed up, a lot of the illegal compensation culture that the NCAA tried to stamp out by raising the value of the individual athlete, the bagman couldn't keep up, and now you're having guys who are like, "Hey, I own the used car dealership, or I'm this kind of guy locally, regionally. I could chip off $1,000 in cash, chip in with somebody. We're going to pay off this local linebacker to go to your school." No, but you can't do that at the magnitude of I'm going to give a kid $100,000 off the books. You can't do that. They can't afford. They literally can't afford it. They've been priced out of the game. So if anything, maybe maybe this rising tide of compensation has actually stamped out the one thing that the NCAA has always been the most afraid of, which is some kid getting a couple hundred bucks.
Yep. So to put a bow on this conversation, people are probably wondering, okay, so what's going to happen? Yeah. What's going to be the cap? Where are we at? Right. And I think there's going to be more conversations in the next 3 to 5 weeks among the commissioners and Brian Seely, the CSC CEO in the NCAA as well, on trying to arrive at an actual cap. And I think just hearing from the Big 12 and ACC administrators, they would probably prefer a cap, you know, in the $30 to $40 million range. And I think those in the SEC and Big 10 would probably prefer a cap in the $50 to $60 million range. So if you meet in the middle,
that's a big difference.
That is a big difference. If you meet in the middle, I'm guessing that's a $45-ish million cap. And if you're going to put a luxury tax on overspenders on that, you know, those overspenders, most of in the Big Ten and SEC, although you do have Miami and Texas Tech and BYU too, and Clemson and Florida State, but those overspenders are going to want that cap to be up so they don't have to get taxed as much. So I'm guessing the cap is going to end up in the 40 to 50 range, but who knows? Maybe they don't agree at all, and the Big Ten and SEC by themselves go to Jeffrey Kessler and say, we want a $60 million cap, and here's our plan, and we want it approved. We're going to give more money to players. You can't possibly reject this. Maybe that happens.
Maybe that happens. Maybe a lot of things happen, and when we come back, I want to talk about the maybes and put Ross on a calendar. Put Ross on a schedule, basically, because of all of the different things that are going on right now underneath the sort of foundation of college football. Let's do a little fan service, a little user service, and try and map out a calendar of when things are going to happen, when they're going to affect the sport you love. We're not going to answer why. You already know why. This is the College Football Inquirer. My name is... It's not Andy Staples. I'm sorry. I almost said Andy Staples because, Ross, think about how many times you've heard the show intro with Andy Staples. That's Ross Dellinger. Ross, in the first segment, we were talking extensively about a calendar for determining a new cap. And one of the things I asked you before the show is, I said, hey, what I want to do is I want to do a quick sit rep. We'll do some military terminology. Situation report, okay? I hope that's what sit rep stands for. I want to take all the things that you have covered this summer, because what I see in the feedback of our show is people saying, is this going to do something to the team this fall or next season? And so roughly what I want to do is apply. There's also the unofficial college football holiday, which is the 4th of July. I don't know if you're familiar with this concept, but think back when you were more of like a beat writer at LSU. Mm-hmm. You have, and LSU is a good example. You got college baseball season, right? You've got the summer camps that the football coaches are putting on. And then you got this dead period, which is kind of like right now as we record this, it's June 30th. And things are going to be dead until about a day or two after the 4th of July. And then we are going to ramp into talking season, right? Mm. Which secretly not a lot happens during talking season, but it feels like it does because every media day is stacked on and they've become major events. And when we get done with talking season, Ross, we're in camps and all of a sudden, bam, we're off and running, chasing all the trains until February. But this season has been a little bit different, this offseason, because of the wanton amount of off-field nonsense going up. I guess we as a twice weekly podcast should probably thank Brendan Sorsby. Maybe like a gift, like a gift card or something. I don't know.
Yeah, the content. It was good content. Yeah. Thank you, Brendan.
What I want to do is people have asked, hey, is this going to affect X? Is X going to affect Y? We used the Trinidad Chambliss example on last week's shows. So I tell you what, let's start with what's going on in D.C. What does the timeline structure look like for a vote? And what would be the soonest impact felt for a college football fan in terms of something from that bill, if it were to pass, actually affecting the game? How fast would that happen?
Well, the goal of Ted Cruz, who's kind of leading the charge here with the bill, the goal for him is to get the bill to the Senate floor in July before the Senate goes on recess. They have an August recess where they're out all of August and the first week of September. And so before you have that big break, you want to get the bill through the Senate floor. And they have, I think it's 15 or 16 working days, the Senate does, before that break. Now, they're on break right now for another week, or another 2 weeks. Yeah, I think another 2 weeks. And so they come back July, maybe 10th or 11th. So from that day, they have 15 or 16 working days. So, you know, that's optimistic, I think, to get it on the floor at some point in July. But there's a lot of support, it seems, or there's a lot of belief in the Senate that the bill does have enough votes to get through the Senate. So that's the idea, Godfrey. So if they do that, right, and by the end of July, the bill gets passed through the Senate, then you have a month break where there's going to be lots of politicking going on over that month of recess. And then the House comes back.
Okay.
The second week of September, first week of September, somewhere around there,
we've now started the football season. Okay. So this thing still has not technically gone into effect yet. If it passes the Senate. Okay. All right.
Yeah. There's no way it's going to go to effect by football season. Right. I mean, that's what Ted Cruz and Marie Cantwell had hoped for, but it would be stunning if that would happen. So House comes back, you know, the goal, I'm sure, would be as quickly as possible for the Senate folks to get it through the House. However, that's where the issues lie. That's where the big hurdles lie, is this bill getting through the House. Because the House leadership, both from Mike Johnson and Steve Scalise from Louisiana, very close, I think, to the SEC. The SEC right now opposes the bill. That's an issue, right? The Congressional Black Caucus, many of its members in the House, opposes the bill, or at least I don't want to say opposes the bill. They want the bill delayed. They don't want any bill that helps sort of college athletics right now. So there's a lot of issues in the House, is the point. And it's going to take weeks, I would think, of negotiating and all that stuff to get this bill through the House. So I'm going to guess the earliest that the bill hits Donald Trump's desk, and this is the most optimistic view ever I'm giving you, is early October, right? Like something like that. Like that's the earliest.
Then. Okay. If that's the earliest, that's like a near Pollyanna situation for this bill.
Yeah.
If it clears several hurdles, and we started with one that's not a certainty, which is getting out of the Senate, getting through the House, getting to Trump.
Yeah.
Two follow-up questions real fast. One, if you're a college football fan, you don't have to absorb this, or you don't. None of the ramifications will be felt going into the 2026 season. So there's your headline. The second part is this: that's really close to the election, so it feels like if you're a Democrat in the House, you're probably going to try, like you said, with the Congressional Black Caucus, for instance.
Yep.
You would probably want to dig your heels in a little bit to see what the makeup of the House and Senate look like after November. Because that's really close, right? And I don't think anybody...
It's a month away. It's about a month out of my optimistic timeline. Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't think anybody on the blue side is necessarily interested in doing anyone any favors. And then second is this. We just saw the President of the United States. All he had to do is sign a housing bill. Just sign a housing bill to bring it into law. And he made huge news nationally to the detriment of his party by simply refusing to sign a bipartisan housing bill that the Republicans and Democrats had worked together to get through to his desk, because he's locked in, down south, he's weasel locked on voter fraud. Am I grasping here to correlate the idea of, like, would he want to sign something that has bipartisan support for college sports if he won't even sign a housing bill? It feels like we're getting unlikelier and unlikelier as we add context.
I'm just basing these next comments off of conversations with whether it's White House people or people in Congress, that the president wants to sign whatever bill on college sports gets to his desk. That's been pretty clear to me. That's not going to be the issue. The issue definitely is going to be in the House, in House leadership. And I think, you know, Godfrey, it's June 30th right now. So this week, the Senate is off. Next week, the Senate is off. Now, they're working still. And this week, maybe a big week on in next week, trying to get some changes in the bill, some amendments, two or three amendments that help get the SEC and Big Ten on board. Because I think the thought is, if you don't have them on board, you still could get the bill through the Senate, but it's going to be difficult to get them in through the House, get it through the House without the SEC and Big Ten on board. And I'll give you a number. It's 318, which is the number of congressmen and women from SEC or Big Ten footprints. 318. There's only 435 in the House. So you can imagine they have a bigger sort of influence on the House. And so if they remain opposed to it, that's going to be a problem. And that's why I said that optimistic timeline is by the end of September, early October, because once it gets to the House, there's going to be 2, 3, 4 weeks of like noshing and maybe more of trying to change this and change that. And, you know, it's not just the House's issues isn't just SEC and Big Ten related, Godfrey. It is the SCORE Act, right? The House's baby, the SCORE Act that died.
Right.
They're pissed about that. Plain and simple.
Yeah.
They're pissed. House leadership's pissed that the SCORE Act died. House leadership's pissed that the SCORE Act didn't receive any vocal, hardly support from the Senate side. And there's this rivalry between the House and the Senate. And I'm just learning about a lot of this stuff. And the House is, it's kind of always viewed like, well, if the Senate passes something, especially if it passes by 2/3 majority, which this could maybe, 65 okay. or so, if the House passes something, the sort of like going, sort of the thing you hear a lot is, well, it's just going to fly right through, or the Senate passes something. Sorry. If the Senate passes something by 2/3, you often hear the House is just going to go right through the House, right? Ah, they'll just check the boxes. Man, the House does not like that, right? And House leadership doesn't like that. And like they're going to take this issue and they're going to slow play this issue, especially if the SEC and Big Ten remain on board or not on board. So
opposed.
It's going to be a real issue. Yeah, it's going to be a real issue. Right. And think about it. All this is going to be playing out in September and October, not just leading up to the midterm elections, which, as you mentioned, could flip the House. So why are Democrats going to get on board with a bill they might not like if they're about to take over the House and take control of this issue?
Yeah, they wouldn't. Correct. They wouldn't have to do anything if they helped.
But not only you have that, but you have you're playing football, right? So it's just kind of like football sort of I don't know how to describe it, but at least in the college athletics world, and you know this, Godfrey, when football begins like September, October, November, and December, not a whole lot of other stuff happens. Like it just everybody's so focused on football, it warrants so much energy that I wonder if even that will slow things down.
Okay. Two things I want to follow up on. First one, the next possible time we could see real movement on a playoff certainty, a change in format structure, teams participation, we are entering, I want to reiterate this because people, this is probably the thing I get asked the most.
Yeah.
How many teams are going to be in the playoff this year? And I tell them, it's the same thing.
Still 12.
Then I have to go, I do have to explain the new Notre Dame exception, which again, is not a that's not a conspiratorial reaction to what happened in Notre Dame last year. That was scheduled to arrive previously, okay? Mm-hmm. I want to say that one more time. If you are pro or anti-Notre Dame, this was just on its way. What happened last year was just circumstantial relative to the new format, okay? So basically, Notre Dame, don't lose one game. You're probably going to be fine this year relative to last year's record without going through their schedule. We are going to have 12 teams in the playoff this year. When is the next time we are going to see a that's a tough word for me to pronounce. I can write it. Substantive conversation about the structure of the playoff.
Probably August.
Event would that be?
A potential college football playoff meeting among the commissioners.
A potential.
Potential, yeah. There's nothing... they have an annual meeting at the end of September, which is an annual, all the commissioners get together in Chicago. There's no sort of annual, like July, August meeting. They had their annual June meeting right in Denver. But I think that you will see a meeting in more like mid-August. I think that'll end up being scheduled if it hasn't already. It won't be any kind of public announcement probably, but that is where I think you'll have a conversation about Will you have a decision then? Unlikely, because I think any decision is going to take, obviously, the SEC getting on board with 24. And so I think that will come in the SEC president's room, which means you have to have an SEC president's meeting. And I think they, too, meet, I want to say, annually, like in late August or something like that. So August is a big month. I think by the end of August, by the start of football season, Godfrey, we'll have a little better idea of where we're going with the playoff and whether it's going to be stay at 12 in 2027. Or if it's going to go to 16, which is unlikely, or going to go to 24. I think the most likely option is that it goes to 24 or stays at 12. That seems to be the theme.
I want to push back on one thing, and then we're going to get out of this topic.
Yep.
The other calendar-based thing, we're going to wait until Andy gets back, and that's basically all of the tweaks that happen annually with oversight and things at the NCAA. Mm-hmm. We'll talk a little bit about that later this week. The last thing I want to ask you here, you said it's unlikely they go to 16, and it seems that the kind of mentality going into the next meeting, hypothetically in August, would be to somehow cajole the SEC into accepting 24. Are we not in a position or a likelihood of the reverse occurring, which is that the SEC throws whatever weight it's got left and tries to convince the opposite power in the Big Ten / Fox to say, why don't we meet at 16? Or some asinine structure at 18 or something like that? Is that not likely?
No, not likely. I think that's tried already and failed. I think last fall and into all the meetings that happened December, January, especially around the championship game last year, there was an attempt made at that. You know, there was an attempt from the Big Ten in the SEC to try to reach some kind of compromise where you would do, I think it was the Big Ten's offer, where for 2 years, you go to 16, and then on year three, you go to 24, and the SEC rejected that offer because they didn't want to commit themselves to going to 24 in 4 years when you don't exactly know how the landscape will look necessarily. So I think that that's already been tried and failed. So I don't expect that. I expect that we're in a place now where it's 12 or 24, and I think the Denver meeting, most of the time was spent on talking about 24 and the calendar around 24 and how difficult scheduling 12 additional games may be in a December calendar, even if you get rid of the conference championship games. And so there's just all those difficulties and hurdles around that.
Ross, you mentioned conference championship games. Everyone's favorite fake tradition in college football. When we come back on our final segment, we're going to talk about a network that tried. You ever try and sublease a place? You ever just be like, hey, you can stay in my apartment this summer if you pay the rent?
Yeah.
A major national network did that with the Big Ten Championship. It didn't work out so well. And now they're kind of a whole new entity, which affects all of college football television rights. We'll talk about it when we come back. College Football Inquirer. I'm not Andy Staples. I'm Stephen Godfrey. I'm getting more comfortable saying it every time we lead back into a segment. Ross, you remember Versus? You got any memory of
Versus?
I do.
Versus? Oh,
you know what I'm talking about? What's your memory of Versus?
Well, you're talking about Versus like during COVID? Like the Versus
No, dude. Versus the television sports network. You got anything on Versus? VS?
Oh, man. No, not really. Well, you know what I was thinking of? Do you remember during COVID and everybody did concerts and stuff digitally?
Yeah.
Wasn't it called Versus, or am I remembering that wrong?
I don't know.
Man. Anyway, tell me about Versus.
If you go on, there's still one of the best, if there is such a thing, television network hype videos for Versus back in 2009, where they take the famous Explosions in the Sky song and they use McNulty's boss from The Wire, the real gruff voiced guy. I can't remember the actor's name. I apologize. And it's like a hype video because they had just gotten the rights to like Mountain West football, Utah Mountain West era. And this was a time when cable channels still mattered, Ross. I had recently worked for a cable channel back in the late aughts. In the late aughts, I was still working. Technically, I was working for Spike TV. Versus became NBC Sports. They parlayed, Ross, like some bull riding rights, some super low tier G5 rights, no offense to the old Mountain West, and they became NBC Sports. And then in 2011, Ross, NBC was sort of sucked up into the greater Borg of Comcast. All right. I don't know where you were in 2011, but essentially Comcast pushed through after about 2 years. That's how long these things used to take. It's amazing to look at the Paramount Skydance acquisition of Warner and how fast it's moving in the Trump era versus the old days. It took about 2 years for Comcast to fully absorb NBC Universal. Okay. And at the time, this was thought to be, it was thought to be a lot of things. You were basically pairing this giant legacy brand of content with a internet provider and television provider back in cable was a big deal. Now, it's 2026. Cable's not that big a deal. But the reason why we should talk about this is that Comcast is basically divesting. It's getting smaller and smaller. It's breaking off this giant network that we've known for the better part of the last decade and a half. And this affects college sports in a big way because, as Andy likes to talk about on this program, any rights holder who has college football content and NFL content is prioritizing the NFL as we move into the next phase of rights negotiations. So yesterday morning as we record this, so it was the morning of the 29th, it was announced that Comcast was basically going to spin off. That's the nice way of saying dump. Okay, if you dump someone, if you're out there and you're single and you want to dump someone, just say you're spinning them off. You're giving them independence to go check out the market, okay? They are spinning off NBC Universal, and I'm going to get to specifically what all this means because they already did this once earlier this year, and they created a company. They spun off their cable networks into something called Versant. Now, Ross, I know you're a big fan of Bravo. You love the Bravo, right? Don't lie. I got you. Don't lie, okay?
I went to BravoCon.
I know you did. November
with the wife. It was my wife's birthday present. Yes, BravoCon. Yeah. It was quite an experience. So I'll just leave it at that.
You are a consumer of Bravo content.
That's right. Yes.
Earlier this year, so they spun off legacy cable outlets, USA, Sci-Fi, Oxygen, E, MS Now, which used to be MSNBC, CNBC, and the Golf Channel. The Golf Channel is now part of this company, Versant. Now, here's where it's interesting for college football. The spinoff that they just did is going to be an independent company called NBC Universal. So that's the Universal Pictures Film Studio, anything that you've ever seen with the Universal logo across of it. NBC, the network, which holds a huge portfolio of sports rights, I'm about to read, all of Telemundo, NBC News, the Peacock streaming app, which college football fans love to hate because once a year they have to do the temp trial for Peacock to watch that like one Saturday night game or that one NFL wildcard game. And then Bravo. They kept Bravo away from the poorer cable networks because there are so many fans like Ross of Bravo content, okay? And then also their theme park division. So if you've ever gone to like Universal Studios in Orlando or LA, okay? By the way, I should also mention this is also including Sky if for some reason you're watching this over in Europe, the United Kingdom. This is a huge company, Ross, but it's thought to be in the rights market out in LA, not a company that's going to survive on its own. The first thing it's going to do, once all the tax implications are done and they divest these entities, it's going to get absorbed. It's going to get bought up. All right. So instantly, moments after this news was revealed, people are talking about, well, who's going to buy this NBC Universal company now? It's not going to survive on its own. The reason why it's not going to survive on its own, logic holds, is that they have big, weighty contracts with sports. And the stockholders and the executives at Comcast were tired of their bottom line being affected by massive television sports contracts. Okay? So what does this mean? It means that someone, maybe Netflix, which was the first entity everyone thought about, would Netflix buy this? Would Apple be interested in this? Could you see an even larger merger with something like Paramount Skydance? All right, so how does this affect college football at all? Right now, NBC Universal still holds rights to Sunday Night Football in the NFL and an NFL package that costs them something in the neighborhood of like $1 billion, a billion with a B. What we know is that the price of the NFL is going up considerably. Have you ever heard of this phrase, Ross? The change of control provision? Do you know what I'm talking about? NFL. And you might know this, honestly, as a college football reporter in the coming years. I'd be curious to see if this gets down to college. The NFL has something called the change of control provision with all of its rights holders. And what that means is if there's a change in ownership or a fundamental company restructuring, investor, basically, if the look of the company you're partnering with changes fundamentally on the ownership line, we are allowed to flip that switch and reopen negotiation. Mm. The NFL is eager to do that because they want to rush to market right now to raise their rates. So it is thought that NBC Universal is going to have to focus on keeping the NFL. They're going to make a move to keep Sunday Night Football and to try and invest as much as they can in NFL content. All right. Now, where does that leave the college football? Notre Dame, legacy NBC partner. What do we know about the Notre Dame deal, Ross? It is bespoke. Some people think it's overvalued. Some people think it's undervalued. It's also a perennial topic of a conversation with, I would say, even college football casuals, because NBC owns the home inventory for the Irish, who schedule independently, but they don't own the away inventory. So every time Notre Dame schedules, it has to be with a sort of value mindset for delivering for NBC Universal. I can't remember if we talked about this on the show. NBC tried to pull a fast one, we think, based off the reporting of Brett McMurphy. This is who I was following when I was putting this together. The 2026 Big Ten championship game, the one to come, all right? NBC held the rights to that. They tried to essentially sublease it, to sublet it to another network or a streamer. The reasoning was that it was thought that because Peacock, the app, had created so many losses for the bottom line, that NBC as an entity under Comcast was basically looking to sort of gin up some cash. They were trying to to sublicense it to a streamer for something like, the people in the industry said it was $60 to $70 million. Ross, one game. One championship game, $60 to $70 million is what they wanted to sublicense it for. Now, unfortunately, there's a little provision. As you know, Fox is basically sort of the owner of the Big Ten's television rights, and they run the Big Ten network. It is going back to Fox this year for something in the neighborhood of $45 to $55 million, specifically because Fox has a clause that says you can't sublicense a sublicense. We already gave you this inventory, and so if it reverts back, then we get it. The long sort of way around this is that we might be minus one major rights holder who's going to be interested in top dollar for college football when we go back to the table in the next couple of years. Whew.
And that could be a problem, right? I mean, we're talking about, think about all the things that come open between 2029 in 2032, college football playoff contract ends, NCAA basketball tournament ends, Big 12 media deal ends, Big 10 media deal ends. A lot of people going to be going in the market. SEC has like a look in around that same time too. I mean, there's a lot going on, and not even mentioning what's going on now with the college football playoff, as we just discussed, which was a good segue to this segment, is they're trying to get more money for a 2014 playoff, and they need to in order to get rid of the conference championship game. So they need that money, and they probably need around at least $250 million from the additional 12 games to get rid of their championship game and recoup the money from a conference championship game. So this could impact a lot of that and be an issue for college executives.
What's interesting is that there's always been this logic for the last 15, 20 odd years in college sports that television rights was a sort of faucet. And if you worked hard enough and you turned it, it was just going to continue to just blast cash into college sports. But what we're seeing across the entertainment industry, and I've said this on the show before, and we've seen it for 4 or 5 years, Ross, just to go back to the joke, people don't want to sign up for Peacock. People already have 4 or 5 app subscriptions that they're signed up for. We're going to see some retraction in this market in the next couple of years. The other interesting thing about how everything else is connected. So I don't know, how much World Cup are you watching right now? How are we doing on
that? But just us.
Periphery?
Just the U.S. I've watched our three matches, but I haven't watched much else.
Okay. The World Cup is killing it right now for Fox.
Yeah.
It's maybe, honestly, regardless of like, and luckily we're a college football show, so none of the soccer nerds are going to hear this except our producer, Brad. The expansion of the format is actually paying off huge. And for whatever
reason,
a lot of soccer purists, the whole pool, everything. So there's more teams in the World Cup than ever before. Much like college football playoff expansion, basically. They expanded all the pools, so you used to have this thing called the group of death in group play. You don't really have it anymore because we expanded the powers away from each other, so more teams make the overall. It's honestly the best comp, if you don't watch soccer, is the heresy debate about breaking off of the 64-team format in basketball and how people get really, really upset, as they should, about the expansion of the NCAA tournament. Except in soccer right now, we've got a great World Cup. The reason why this affects college football is very simple. This is the last year that Fox holds the rights. And they are going to go to market in FIFA for the U.S. rights for the World Cup. And one of the places thought to be a landing spot is NBC Universal because they hold the rights to the Premiership, which is the English soccer league that airs in the morning if you're a sicko and you're up at 6 a.m. with like an infant or you're just a weird soccer fan. NBC is probably going to try and bid on that. So is ESPN. They used to hold the rights on this. Mm-hmm. The market is becoming more crowded. This is what I was trying to explain. Also, NBC just paid a huge bill to get back in the game with it, with the NBA. Mm-hmm. I'm very, very curious if Ross, the next, let's say we have a hypothetical meeting in August to tie it back to the previous segment, and the SEC says, you know what, guys, we give up. Let's do a 24-team college football playoff. Yeah. I don't know if this debt-laden, completely insecure entity that is NBC Universal, without merging with someone like Netflix or Amazon, because those are the two likeliest destinations as of June 30th, 2026, can even get in the game and provide inventory space for that college football playoff. Not to mention how this affects the Big Ten, whose deal with NBC ends in 2030, and Notre Dame football.
Well, that is a good point. It's not just about the money, right? It's about the windows and the amount of inventory and getting overloaded. I mean, I think ESPN, as you know, Godfrey, they've been clear, at least privately, and we learned about this publicly through ACC Commissioner Jim Phillips when he just outwardly in a press conference said ESPN is against a 2014 playoff. And I think part of the reason is the amount of windows and the amount of windows that will be clogged with NFL games as well already. And so that's a big issue. You know, in Denver, when the commissioners met to discuss the expansion of the playoff, that was a big topic. And I heard from the room, Greg Sankey and John Steinbrecher were two of the commissioners who were asking a lot about how we're planning on scheduling all these games and how much of an issue it would be with the networks and with the NFL. And there's just a lot of hurdles there. So it's a great point that window is really clogged from an inventory perspective. And all this is, you know, one of the things we haven't talked about, Godfrey, is like the NFL is going to go to market early and take a lot of money out of the market. And also they continue to encroach on the college football schedule. And I don't know that that's going to stop anytime soon. I'm sure they'll continue to try to encroach on the college football schedule.
Ross does the heavy lifting on the reporting on this show. Occasionally I throw a dart against the board, but I'm pretty accurate. Labor Day. They're coming for Labor Day, guys. Yep. This is not an industry secret. This is something that is openly discussed. Mm-hmm. They took Thanksgiving. They've taken Christmas from the NBA. They took Black Friday. They're going to take Labor Day. So watch out. All right. Ross, go do some journalism. We'll be back with hopefully Andy Staples to guide this ship because God knows it's weird being at the wheel of this machine. My name is Stephen Godfrey. That's Ross Dellinger. We will see you Thursday.